Thank you, Harry. The message this morning is actually based on some of the readings that we just did, as well as some of those from last week, because we didn't return initially when we planned either. It's funny how it kind of relates to the message, because it was actually in prayer that Catherine had the sense that we were supposed to delay our flight, and then Delta posted this wonderfully vague message on their website that flights into Tel Aviv were neither canceled nor guaranteed, which was just brilliant. And actually very much like El Al, they said, "And all grace is to you, call us and let us know what you want." And they did. They really did. They just made it work. Whatever we asked for, they just did it, and it was really kind of special. That's just a funny thing. But it relates to this story because the message is about the command at the beginning of Deuteronomy 11, which is from last week, to tell the story and to remember the story. And it's about the idea of the fact that you need to tell the story because, one, you're commanded to tell the story, but because obedience to the commands of the Lord kind of need the story. And in another way, I'd like to suggest that also, as much as obedience, we need the story for the obedience, that obedience actually also breeds the story. And so, yeah, I couldn't speak last week. It's been changed to this week, and it might seem like I'm just kind of rambling about that, but it's that intentionality of the fact that it's related to telling the story, and that we changed our travel plans just because we thought the Lord told us to. The kind of funny thing about that is I told Gary, you know, we had to change. We had a health crisis, a small health scare or warning, happen in the interim. So we weren't sure that one of our family members should have flown, actually, or was safe to fly. And we were able to get all that checked. And we didn't know why we were changing our travel plans, which, well, just a silly thing, right? Delta saying, all grace is to you, feel free to change your plans. The Lord said to change the date, let's just do it. And then there was a reason. There was time, there was space for that. In another funny thing is that I spoke just over a year ago here, and this is funny to me, maybe. I've only given three sermons. This will be the third in my life. I was a pre-seminary student in undergrad and ended up becoming a professor. I won't bore you with that whole story. So I've spoken a lot about the things of the Lord, but in classrooms, not in services so much. The reason I say it's funny to me is because I'm talking today about telling the story. The other two times I've actually spoken, I was specifically asked to tell our family's story. That's, would you just come share your story? And so again, I sit down with the readings for last week, and the command is tell the story. Oh, this is a theme. So again, why the story? Because God commands it. And why command it? Because walking in the way is hard, and it needs the story. So I'm going to read a little bit from last week's reading, just to, in case you all don't have it memorized, not that I do. It's Deuteronomy 11. "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God ask of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and to observe the Lord's commands and decrees that I'm giving you today for your own good. To the Lord your God belong the heavens, even the highest heavens, the earth and everything in it. Yet the Lord set his affection on your ancestors and loved them. He chose you, their descendants, above all the nations as it is today. Circumcise your hearts, therefore, and do not be stiff-necked any longer. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality and accepts no bribes. He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. Fear the Lord your God and serve him. Hold fast to him and take your oaths in his name. He is the one you praise. He is your God who performed for you those great and awesome wonders you saw with your own eyes. Your ancestors who went down into Egypt were 70 in all, and now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars in the sky. Love the Lord your God, keep his commandments, his decrees, his laws, and his commands always, Remember today that your children were not the ones who saw and experienced the discipline of the Lord, your God, his majesty, his mighty hand, his outstretched arms. And it goes on to describe some of that deliverance from Egypt. And then in verse 7 it says, but it was your own eyes that saw all these great things the Lord has done. Observe, therefore, all the commands I'm giving you today. And we read earlier, right, about the blessing and the curse that is before the people if they do or do not follow those commands. And then it revisits the idea of how you might remember the story. Fix these words of mine in your hearts and your minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them to your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home, when you are walking along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates so that your days and the days of your children may be many in the land the Lord swore to give your ancestors, as many as the days that are in the heavens above. Sorry, as many as the days, yes, that the heavens are above the earth. So the story is supposed to ever be in front of us. And Deuteronomy 12 to 15, right, following that, is the commands. It's just this great, wonderful body of commands, the way that we're supposed to walk in. And it's very much how the people that are about to enter the land, as we heard in the reading earlier, right? They're about to cross the Jordan. They're going to proclaim these blessings from two mountains, the blessings from one mountain and the curse from the other. And it's how they're going to be set apart and distinct, right? In chapter 12, it talks about you're not going to behave like the local people, right? You're not going to behave just how you want, not to each his own way, as is often done today, it says, right? And it implores them, do everything in the law. Do not add to it and do not take away from it. There are many false prophets, other gods. You have family and friends who worship them and follow them. Don't join them. They'll say, let us go worship here. Let us go do this. Don't give in to them. Don't accept the invitation to other towns and other neighborhoods where they're doing other things. And then the commands of the clean and unclean foods, the tithes, canceling of the debt, generosity to the poor, freeing servants, the way to slaughter animals to celebrate the festivals, and then the story of the festivals, right? So the offerings and then the festivals to remember the story. It's this kind of culmination of revisiting the story. But there's this long list of things. Don't join. Don't fit in. Don't stand out. Be set apart. It's your land, but you're going to stick out like a sore thumb in it. Why the story? Because it's not going to be comfortable. It's not easy. It's foreign. It's strange. Why this story? Because, as it says, the children don't know. They're not the generation who saw. Sorry, I'm a crier. Why it's worth doing? They haven't all heard if they're not told. We were traveling this summer also in the States. Like I said, we had the same kind of delay that Gary went through. And there was this really interesting conversation we had. I'm preparing this sermon. We're sitting with dear friends of ours, and the father, who is a tech engineer for a major company, is saying, talking about his own childhood. And he's explaining to us what it was like, because his parents had split and his father lived a very, very little provision in his life. Like, the way he explained it was, when my brothers and I went to stay with my dad, he'd pull out the cash he had, $20, okay guys, you're here for a week, this is what we eat on, figure it out, $20, go to the store. And it was like, he said, this was such an experience. He said, it was hard, but I look back on it, it's like I've learned so much. And he was saying this, one reason not to use his name, because he was saying, my daughters are spoiled brats, and that's my fault. I have more than I could ever need because of what I've been able to achieve, and I give them everything they want. And I'm happy to do it, but sometimes I feel like I maybe need to make them suffer a little Because they just don't get it. They don't know why it's great, they don't know why it's great to have what they have. And so they don't appreciate it. The reading in the Haftarah is from Isaiah, right? And this is part of Israel's longer story. Because as we know from the big story, they end up in the land, they get the blessing, and they can't honor it. You have this beautiful gift, and the people do worship other gods. Even the leaders of the people follow other gods. And the nation, the capital, the temple, is lost. It's a story for a people who failed. But the Lord promises restoration. So Isaiah 55, we read part of this earlier, but I've written it here, so I'm going to read it again. Come, all who are thirsty, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money, without cost. You hear the echo of the poor in Deuteronomy there. The promise that it will be no need for there to be poor among you. And a few verses later, the verse that Jesus echoes, the poor will always be among you. Why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen to me and eat what is good, and you will delight in the richest of fare. Give ear and come to me. Listen that you may live. I will make an everlasting covenant with you, my faithful love promised to David. See, I have made him a witness to the peoples, a ruler and commander of the peoples. Surely you will summon nations you know not, and nations you do not know will come running to you because of the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, for he has endowed you with splendor. The story, the promise. What are you to do? Tell the story. Even more, bind it, tie it on yourself. Why? Because there's a command to obey. Not fit in. Like the people calling for a king. I mean, David is praised here, probably foreshadowing Christ, really, but a man after God's own heart failed. Saul, the first king, establishes the nation in that way. Falls. Solomon, the wisest, comes to worship other gods. The people wanted to fit in. We want to be like the other nations. We want to get along. When I was in that pre-seminary degree I mentioned earlier, it's the only other time I gave sermons was in a classroom, was assigned. So I don't count those, really. But there was a huge movement at the time. So much research was being done in Christian studies. If the business world and marketing and all these things can learn from research, why can't we do demographic research as Christians and better serve the church? That birthed a lot of the seeker movement. And what was it? Fit in. Build churches people want to be in. Why don't we have Starbucks in here? Why is McDonald's not in here? Every church, right, can be a place that people want to come. And once they're in the door, then we can get to them. And I'm not criticizing this per se, but it's a focus on being what people want. And I appreciate the effort to reach as many people as possible, but the command is actually different. To stand out, to be set apart, to stick your neck out. Because God is sticking his neck out for us, for you, Israel, the chosen, the covenanted, the betrothed. And he's asking you to say yes to the invitation. It's a promise of blessing, rain. The desert will bloom. Of course, you can say no, right? Back to Isaiah. The promise is lost. But God's faithful, even to the unfaithful bride. That's also part of the story. Why the story? The command is not easy. Why the story? Because you need strength to persevere, to endure, to remember when it's hard why you're doing it, and that God is faithful. To be able to return to this story, the story of the way, the path that we're supposed to be in. Right, in Deuteronomy, it's pretty obvious. It's the story of Exodus, about to enter the land. Right, in Isaiah, there's even more to the story that they're bringing in. Right, there's Joshua, right, the actual achievement of getting in the land. There's the story of the judges, the kings. Some of this is troubling. Right, and as the story expands, you know, there's the story of Cyrus bringing the people back. The second temple. But then again, the Greeks are coming, and there's more loss. And the Maccabees throw off the Greeks, but then they invite the Romans. It's this amazing tug of war to be part of the world, to be a nation among the world, and yet to be set apart. In our own story, my family's story, we had another conversation this summer is probably the best way to tell it. It's not easy. And we moved over 2.5 years ago to Jerusalem. And it's funny. It's not been easy. And I don't know about the rest of y'all. Maybe it's easy for the rest of y'all to listen to the Lord and to follow what he says. It may just be us. But it's not been easy. It's been complicated. And maybe one of the most difficult things is that even believers have opposed us at many turns in our lives when we've tried to follow the Lord and be faithful to his commands. And the difficulty to them, for many of them, proves that we're not following the Lord. Now, I remember Jesus saying something about it not being easy, so I don't understand that line of thinking myself. However, it is different to have dear friends, not necessarily inviting us to go worship other gods in nearby towns, but saying, the Lord would never ask you to do that. Or, if you obey that command, it would be dangerous for you or for your children. In exploring these difficulties with dear friends this summer, it was very interesting that the wife of the couple that we were sitting with said to my wife, no! Catherine was explaining how hard it is and how sometimes she doubts. She said, no! Don't you remember? And I don't need to go into it, but when we thought we were coming, and we didn't know that we were staying, but when we thought we were coming to Israel, and we thought for whatever reason, the Lord was inviting us as part of this journey, our story, probably because we needed it more than anything, to just sell everything and get rid of everything so that we would really be free, probably mostly in our own hearts, to actually obey. This dear couple prayed with us, and they said, don't you remember your daughter's dream? Don't you remember the word the Lord gave to this other person? Don't you remember that phone call and the person says, look up this verse. I don't know. I really think it's from the Lord. If it's something offensive, just forget I said it. Don't you remember when we were all praying and this person got this? Don't you remember? She told us our story. Because it's hard sometimes, and sometimes it's only because of the story that we continue to walk, presumably. This has been something the Lord has taught us, that we need to revisit what he has done in scriptures, of course, but also in our lives. And there are the beautiful stories throughout the scriptures where the Lord calls the people to create monuments, not necessarily grand. Pick an elder from every tribe. Have them grab a stone and make a pile. I mean, this is not the golden calf, you know. Still one of my favorite stories in the whole Bible. And I'm sorry for this aside. This is not planned. But I still just think it's hilarious. as great as Aaron might be, that his response is, I threw all the gold into the fire and this thing popped out, right? That's, he tries to tell this story. It's a different story he's telling. So we do have to be careful, the stories we tell. But what a wonderful line. I put it in there and this popped out. I didn't, I mean, we know he crafted it, but look, it was a miracle. Couldn't be my fault. Don't blame me. So again, the call is often hard. Yeshua reinforces the commands, right, that we need the story for. In the readings from the Brit Hadashah and the New Testament, do not be led astray by the false prophets, right? And it's not only blessing, as some might preach, peace, peace, or prosperity. Even with Christ, even with the Messiah, even having met him, John the Baptist in prison sends his disciples and says, are you the one who is to come? Or should we expect someone else? Jesus sends him back and says, tell the story. Report to John. What did you see and hear? The blind receive sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. It's like he was reading Deuteronomy. There are metaphors here, I think, perhaps for us. Jesus is working often, right? Let the blind see. Let the deaf hear. He who has ears. He's raising the lame, but what are we called to do? We're called to walk in the way. And that indictment that you will have no need for the poor, and yet a few verses later in Deuteronomy, the poor will always be with you. When the woman breaks the alabaster jar with this extremely expensive perfume and begins to bless the Lord, and the disciples are offended, she proves that there is no need for the poor. And when the Lord says, the poor will always be with you, it's not just a fact. It's, yes, there shouldn't be poor people, but somehow they're still here. You're right. They don't need to be here. There's no need for there to be any poor among you. But don't blame her for this. She's part of the story. So, I said I promised I'm a crier, so I apologize. But in this world of the new body of Christ and of the Messiah, there is this potential to hear, to see, to walk in the way, to live the story. It's a richer, fuller, truer embodiment of the life that the promise could have been fulfilled. But yet it's still potential, not actual. The poor remain always among us. And in the command to obey, the body must remember the story, but not just the biblical story, the story of what the Lord is doing today. When we've shared our story, and this is not at all a humble brag, sometimes people say, oh, that's amazing, that's wonderful. Okay, sure, I mean, that's kinder or whatever. But in reality, it's not easy. And we need to remember that it was the Lord's doing, not ours. It was his call, his command, and that story is only as good as the obedience that it generates. Jesus promises that in that obedience, his disciples will be hated, rejected, even to the point where he warns them, you may have to hate your family, so to say. Like in Deuteronomy, they will invite you to other things. Rejection's hard. He promises them ridicule, hatred, scorn. Of what? Of the way they're walking, and they're setting themselves apart, and it's going to be hard. If you're going to obey, some people will oppose it. It may shock you that it's believers sometimes, but it's true. That verse doesn't really mean that. God didn't really want you to do that. Radical generosity, that's unwise. Go out. Well, that's dangerous. Leaving your home, that's not. Interestingly, on the radical generosity side, one of my favorite stories, and this precedes the Lord's initial leading us into a life of ministry. We were both still just teachers at the time, and the Lord was blessing what he was doing there, but again, this is very autobiographical. It's part of telling the story. But there's this wonderful story when we were really beginning this journey in our family of just trying to radically just obey the commands of the Lord, that we said, we're really going to try to give to everyone who asks. We're just going to try to do it. Someone asked me for money, I'm going to give it to them. Someone asked me for something, I'm just going to do my best to honor that. We're going to open our home, the command to hospitality. We're just going to have people as often as we can and bless them. And the story is that Catherine was actually driving. She was out running errands, and this gentleman, a homeless man, said, hey, can you give me some money? It's so hot. It's the middle of summer. It's so hot. I'd like to go get a drink. And Catherine says, I don't have cash, but I have a water bottle full of cold water. Can I give it to you? He said, that would be amazing, because a lot of these shops, mine broke, and a lot of these shops around here will just let you fill up your water bottle. They don't care that I'm homeless, and they'll let me come in and get water. So now, I'll have water whenever I want. It was my water bottle. I was actually a little bit upset. She came home. She's like, by the way, your favorite water bottle now belongs to someone else. I gave it away. But the story, right, this almost unquenchable water now, simply out of obedience, because we trusted that it is true. In the story of Deuteronomy, what is this story? What is this obedience? It struck me a few years ago when some people were in a wonderful study we were doing, just exploring the story of Moses. And it struck me there are obviously richer, further interpretations. But what the obedience of being in the desert. Moses had been in Egypt. He had ended up in Moab. He had come back from Moab to Egypt. Moab is right next to Canaan. And when they leave, these people presumably know some of this, and presumably they have used the stars and the movement of the sun to navigate before, even in Egypt, to have a basic understanding of direction. Canaan's over there, and we're going this way because there's fire or a cloud over there. To do that for a couple generations, that's obedience. Why are we in the desert? Because that guy's leading us, and even though he knows exactly how to get us where we're going, where we've been promised for hundreds of years. These people know the story, presumably, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They know the land's promise. They know it belongs to them because the one true God ordained it to be so, but we're going the opposite direction because there's a cloud over there that we have to follow. It's a wild kind of obedience. God promised that. And again, I apologize, it's very autobiographical, but as we moved into serving in ministry, several times we've run into moral crises with people that we were ministering with. And it's been a little shocking, the level of comfort that people desire and seek. And I say that to mean, I don't know how many times people said, but don't you want me to be happy? But this is who I am. I'm just being very honest. To myself, I'm being genuine, I'm being authentic, I'm living out my truth, my life. Don't you want that for me? No. I mean, not really. I mean, the truest form of who you are, yes, but you're going just after whatever you want, whatever feels right. You're following the flesh, not the spirit. You're not walking in the way. Why would I want anything else for you? And these, again, are believers, presumably committed to the Lord, following him. And just the opposition to the truth, to the story. And it was not easy to see worshiping communities broken, marriages torn apart. And having said that, we went through a season, and I said marriages torn apart, we went through a season where it seemed like people kept coming to us and confiding in us that their marriage was dissolving. So much so that when actually the Lord did start to lead Catherine and I to maybe leave, our oldest daughter came to us and said, "Are you guys getting a divorce?" And what she meant by that was she could tell we were having these deep, heavy conversations because we thought we're moving somewhere in the world and we don't know where, and we're selling everything and getting rid of it, so we'll be free to do that. Like I said, mostly for us. The Lord had to help us cut our ties. And she said, "Are you guys getting a divorce?" And we're like, "No. We're good. The Lord seems to be doing something. We're getting ready for it." But as these people came, it was very... it was very hard to imagine what they were thinking before the separation had to happen. And again, the central theme, happiness, self. I want this. Won't it? It'll just be easier on everyone if we separate, if we just dissolve this marriage. But there was one amazing story of a couple that, where only the husband said, "I'm just going to be faithful to what the Lord says. She asked me to move out, I won't. She asked me to give up on her, I won't. I will take care of the kids. I will pursue her like the Lord has pursued his people." Because that is the story we're walking in. And we watched him for months go through so much pain, but we watched his wife's heart be won back to him and the Lord through his faithfulness. Are we really willing to be faithful to the commands that we do see and hear? Are our ears open? Are our eyes open? Are our hearts open to what the Lord is asking us to? Will we be like even Jesus, who said, "I'm just going to do what I see the Father doing and say what I hear him saying"? Or are we lame, blind, deaf to what the Lord's actually doing in the world and rejecting what he's teaching? Are we doing it because it's easier to blend in? Easier to have false gods in our life? Right, there's so many sermons about all the different types of false gods. I won't revisit any of all the, you know, that sort of... I mean, not that there's anything wrong with them, just you don't need to hear me say it. It is very easy to just go with what the flesh says. I feel the desire to have it. I feel it in the moment. This would just be so simple to react. It's easier. It's more comfortable. It feels more true to who I am. Seems to be a very consistent theme lately. Doesn't bring unwanted attention. If I say something, if I speak up, if I stick my neck out, if I dress differently, eat differently, I don't want that attention. It's so, I don't want to be singled out. I don't want to be the goody two-shoes or some legalistic person. I don't want suffering or hardship. And this is why we tell the story. Because there are moments when it's easier to just go to Canaan. How many prosperity gospels, and I'm not trying to pick on anyone or anyone's thoughts here, but how many gospels are there out there that God promised you this, you can have it? And I believe that's true. But if the Lord says, "Go this way," where's the promise? Somehow 40 years of going this way brings the promise that's that way. "We just fought a battle, Lord. I'm a little bloodied, I'm bludgeoned, and I can't have any of the spoils. You commanded us to do this. But he commanded to leave everything behind. Destroy it. Burn it. Get rid of it. Don't take a servant. Don't take an animal. Don't take a jewel. Because I have something else for you. But it's good. It'll bless me. You promised to bless me. Why can't I have these things? This is the story. And so many of us, the body of Messiah in so many ways has been established, blessed, and the instinct to say, why can't we? Why can't I? This looks so good. This fits. It seems to fit to me. And I come back to John the Baptist. I come back to the disciples. Peter rejecting the Messiah. He walked with him. Even the disciples on the road to Emmaus had to have the whole story, had to have it explained to them again. I don't know what that was like for Jesus. To have gone through everything, to have died and been resurrected, and still to have to tell the story again for people to see him and recognize him. As we enter the fall festival season, right, again, Deuteronomy 16, these beautiful festivals, the story of Messiah, and his death and resurrection as paralleled in the spring festivals, Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the First Fruits, and the fall festivals in our future, and as we celebrate the story of what the Lord has done and what he's doing, this story of telling the story because it, the command to obedience needs the story, reminds me that obedience also breeds the story. When we obey, we have a story to tell. And the last little thing I'll share as I emphasize that, as we were ministering in the States, we were in this small community of mostly young believers, and they said, we don't know how to tell the story, our story. And as teachers, that seemed a thing of almost just training. Apologetics, evangelism, this is how you tell the story. You know, the old Romans Road or something. But I was struck in the moment to ask, you know, in Peter it says, you should have a reason for the hope that's in you. And we actually invited everyone to different weeks tell their story, and we encouraged them to have a story to tell. And the reason I mention that is because several people came to us and said, I realized something. I don't have a story. Or if I have a story, it's my parents' story. It's not my story. I have the biblical story, but I don't have a story. I don't know why I want this to be my story. And that started each of them on their own journey to explain this for themselves, how the story is connected to their obedience and their living it out. I wish you would.
Like, the water bottle thing was right at the beginning of us really trying to obey the commands of Jesus. And we found that the water bottle led to giving away a car to someone that needed it, which led to giving away this, which led to giving away more and more and more, to having an open pantry for all these kids that we were discipling, college students, and then finally to leave everything. It was like the Lord is so gracious and sweet and gentle, that it was like, just a little, like, just what, can you give a water bottle? Like, as much as we're willing to give in our faith, he's willing to have as an investment. And it's never pushy, and it's never rude, and he's so kind. But it's like, it does lead to so many stories as we obey. That's right, it leads to story after story after story. And then all of a sudden you realize you've been, if you connect them, it is a road, it's a way. And following the commands of Jesus literally took us automatically onto his way, which makes sense. But.
Yeah, I'll close with this. There's a sweet part of the TV series about Jesus, The Chosen. I say it's sweet partly because it helps tell the story to some other people. I had several people say, oh, what is this interesting part in Passover, right, the Dayenu, where it's, you know, if you had only done this, it would have been enough, if you had only. In The Chosen, if you haven't seen it, right, it goes through basically the Exodus story, the Passover accounts, if you'd only done this, but the disciples start to add. If you had just raised the dead, if you had just cured the leprosy, if you had just this, it would have been enough. And in the idea that we need the story to obey, the command is to tell the story because it helps us walk out the story. And that obedience in turn also breeds the story. The disciples realized that. They lived it out and there was a new story. And so I don't tell the autobiographical stuff at all to say, look at me. I don't. It's really the Lord. It's me fumbling through the obedience. And honestly, I should say maybe that there have been several times when after the fact I said, you know, I really think the Lord, what I thought I heard was probably right. And I'm sure I missed something, right? There's something I missed in not doing that. I thought, maybe, no. And there have been times when people have asked me for money and I said, you know, bleak SF, I don't have any cash. You know, when I did, I lied. I flat out lied. Felt uncomfortable, felt awkward, seemed like the wrong time. And maybe it was for some reason, right? Anyway, the idea is not that somehow we've arrived in it or something. It's the challenge to do it. But that story from The Chosen, it's that, Lord, if you had just taught us something in the giving of the water bottle, if you had just taught us something when encouraging a friend to suffer through the horrible persecution his wife put him through, actually healed a marriage. They have a child from the affair that lives with them, and they have to share custody. This gentleman has to see the man. And because his wife really can't, he goes every time to see the guy who's the father of this child. And he prays for him every day. It's just such a crazy story that has blessed us so much. But to watch him do that, to be faithful, and to watch the people, right, we're here, and God's been faithful. There are people alive who suffered so much just because they were chosen. And they tell the story. And they are here now and they see God's provision, what they went through. You know, and they get to say, look what the Lord has done. And they may not have met Yeshua yet. Praise God, they will. I just invite you to tell the story, tell your children, because they may not realize it. Our kids remind us, but they may forget. They haven't lived it all. They haven't seen it. It doesn't have to be, you know, I walked up the hill both ways to and from school, but you know, we tell these stories. This is what the Lord has done, because it will help them obey. Because it is so hard. Thank you.